silver of Ulrich Ceramite. "Why do you stand with him?" I asked the Iron Warrior, seeking any hesitation in his movements. There was none. "Why do you stand with Daravek?" Ulrich held the lock for a moment until we both disengaged, stepping back as one.
"Abaddon is no less a tyrant,"
was the swordsman's curt reply. I did not argue that point. Our blades clashed in a series of swings and parries. I refused to give ground now, deflecting what I could and weaving aside from what I could not. We were only meters away from my brothers. There was nowhere left to go. Ulrich was not as silent as I had suspected. He spoke as our blades' power fields repelled one another with snarls of abused energy.
"Why did you abandon your legion?"
I confess the question surprised me.
"To escape the shadows of our failed fathers," I said. "From shame and shadow recast, in black and gold reborn. The battle cry of a false legion,"
Ulrich grunted.
"The battle cry of a new way, a new war. You cannot outrun shame,"
the terse warrior growled.
"Those who do not learn from the past,"
I countered,
"are condemned to repeat it."
We crossed blades again and again, neither of us managing to score second blood. I was getting the measure of his swordplay, which was at worst masterful and at best exquisite. Telemachon might have beaten him by now. It was all I could do to maintain the deadlock.
"I'm growing bored, Kaon,"
Abaddon called to me.
"End it."
Blood of the gods, but I was trying. I fainted with a carving slash that became a throat thrust when Ulrich took the bait, only to have Sacramentum's blade hammered aside when the Iron Warrior instantly recovered.
"Malium,"
Abaddon said to Daravek across the duel. I refused to let their words distract me.
"That was an inspired piece of spite."
Daravek's immense wings rippled, wafting us with a breeze of charcoal-stinking air.
"Malium was the least of the insults I inflicted upon your domain, Ezekiel."
Abaddon no longer sounded amused.
"Is that so?"
Daravek began to list his role of the discord and dishonor his forces had inflicted upon us. For the weeks it had taken us to sail to the Eye's Edge, months had passed for the Lord of Hosts Armada. They had rampaged through our territory, bringing ruin to our garrisons, raining destruction upon our fortresses. Daravek related it all, battle by battle and fall by fall, in meticulous and lascivious detail. Ulrich and I punctuated the warlord's delighted screed with the thrum and crash of active power fields, our duel continuing throughout the recitation. A legionary is a transhuman construct, but humanity still forms our cause. We are not created without flaws, and the individual motions of a battle or a duel are not always easy to recall, even to our eidetic memories. This is because of that most unstable of elements, emotion. Anger especially can cloud a warrior's otherwise clear recollection, staining memory red, bathing it in feverish heat. With every word that left Daravek's mutated mouth, I found it harder to maintain my duelist's meditation. My focus began to slip. I started catching Ulrich's blows on instinct as much as by observance of his posture or prediction based on his muscle movements. Worse, I felt the insipid creep of unease needling its way through my mind, a physical sensation, cold down my spine. My meditative principles were the best chance I had at surviving this fight, and Abaddon, curse him, had invited Daravek to speak his venom at the worst possible moment. On and on went the recitation of inflicted pain. Malium savaged by orbital bombardment, whole tectonic chunks of the world broken free and loaded into his fleet's mass drivers. We considered the grave world useless, but the symbolism in the act could not be ignored, and worse was yet to come. Three of our warships now sailed with Daravek's armada, taken as plunder in battle, their defenders overwhelmed and their surviving crews enslaved to the whips of Daravek's overseers. The others were destroyed or lost in I-space, driven away from the regions they had sworn to protect. Hostages had been taken from the warship Song of Wrath, the flagship of the modest fleet we had left to watch over our territory. Its commander, Ranagar Koval, was one of those captured. I knew Koval well, a former Sons of Horus legionary and lieutenant to Fleetmaster Valakar. He was a stern and intuitive presence, adding his measured, aggressive wisdom to Valakar's cold, defensive calculations. Daravek's men had peeled him from his armor with mining lasers, bound him with chains between two land raiders, and torn him apart. While he still lived, torn in two, they had fed him to the demon hounds shackled to the command throne aboard Daravek's flagship. Other fates for our warriors were no less dishonorable. Crippled and wounded, some were lowered into vats of industrial acid. Others were slowly crushed beneath the slow-rolling treads of battle tanks, while packs of Daravek's mutant slaves looked on and jeered. The final insult came when Daravek gestured one of his warriors forwards, almost to the edge of the duel. The World Eater dropped a stinking black cloak onto the Wraithbone floor. At once I was struck by the reek of piss from the dark cloth, the stench old and rank and sour. The World Eater kicked the cloak to unroll it. I only heard it happen, as I could not spare the attention to look, but the reaction from my brothers told me the truth as easily as my eyes would have. Abaddon exhaled a feral breath. Iliaster's armor joints growled as they tensed. Even Telemachon murmured a sibilant hiss, the closest he came to showing his displeasure. The next time I disengaged from Ulrich, I dared to steal a glance, and sure enough, I had guessed right. The cloth was not a cloak at all. The slitted eye of Horus, set in the sunburst yellow of the eightfold path, stared open, stained from the middle of the cloth. The cloth had wrapped a handful of bones, still reddened with blood marks and stringy with ligaments, marked with the engravings of fangs where they had been gnawed. The banner of the Black Legion. They'd taken one of our banners, used it as a funeral shroud for Ranagar Koval's demon-chewed bones, and then let their slave hordes soak it with streams of tainted piss. Screaming marred the duel now. Throaty, wrathful roars that I didn't realize until I ran out of breath were rising from my throat. All serenity and meditative thought was lost, replaced by a red focus. I advanced on Ulrich, laying my entire weight into every blow. Sparks sprayed from protesting power fields. They shrieked together with the abuse of every clashing parry. I rained two-handed blows against him, faster than I could ever recall fighting, faster than I believe I have ever moved since. He beat my guard several times, for I fought with almost no guard at all. Yet he failed to land any true wounds. Every time his blade scored my battle plate, he was forced to pull back and defend himself again. I knew I could not win. I did not care. Even when I had him on the defensive, he was a better, faster fighter than me. He gave ground, blocking and deflecting instead of risking any attack, but I could not break his guard down. I still did not care. Roaring, my senses choked by the waste stink of our defiled banner and my brother's blood-stained bones, I attacked without thought of the wounds I would take. I wanted blood. I wanted to steal life as it had been stolen. I wanted revenge. This is Vindicta. This is what I speak of when I say it fuels the hearts of the Black Legion's warriors, when I say it beats with the blood in our veins. Revenge at any cost. Vengeance no matter what. There was no revelation of truth suddenly burning in my mind, no flash of bleak clarity that dispersed the red fury. Later, Telemachon would offer his blade master's perspective, that the only way I could win was to not care if I lost. All combatants still seek to protect themselves, even in the bloodiest heat of battle. Even the world-eaters, when the nails bite into their brains, will defend themselves on instinct and through the blessings of gladiatorial muscle memory. That day, against Ulrich, I abandoned all efforts to survive. Vindicta flowed through my skull instead of rational thought. I gave him my arm. Willingly, as a sacrifice to slow his blade, it happened in a hundredth of the time it takes to retell. A backhanded blow to batter his sword aside, a flaring burst of a power field, a sonic boom that thundercracked my forearm. I thrust forward in the very same second. I will never forget the sick ease with which Sacramentum slid in, its hilt kissing the shattered ceramite of Ulrich's chest, nor the agonized flexion of his entire body as I twisted the blade where it was buried inside his primary heart. I pulled Sacramentum free with a sweeping yank, annihilating at least one of his three lungs on the way back out. Blood sizzles, evaporating on my blade's edge. I was already moving, bringing Sacramentum down on Ulrich's sword arm, shattering his fist and the power generator in the blade's grip. On the backswing, I hammered my blade into his side, where it cut deep and stuck fast. He had staggered away, ruining a blow that would have severed him at the waist, but he was slowed by his internal injuries. I kept my grip on Sacramentum, stepped closer, and dragged the blade free, my boot thudding into Ulrich's shattered breastplate for leverage. I backed away from the Iron Warrior, who, damn him, still refused to fall. One-handed, his organs doubtless aflame with pain and threatening to cease functioning, he still refused to yield. He watched, wheezing through his helm's grill, looking between me and his fallen, broken sword. Fire ignited along my left arm. Pain suppressants squirted into my bloodstream, and I flinched at the sight of my arm ended at the elbow. The stump of ceramite spat a couple of sparks and dripped treacly blood as the wound already began to seal. I had never been mutilated before. I could not rectify what I was seeing with reality, not even when I saw my hand and forearm on the ground, the armor plating shattered. I wanted to finish Ulrich. I wanted nothing more than to take his head and hold it high, crying out my triumph to the mad gods that watched over us. I could feel the warp itself wanting the same fate, as unseen winds carried the whispers of demons waiting to be born from the barbaric act. But I lowered my blade. Against every instinct, I lowered Sacramentum and forced the words through my ragged breathing. In the earliest days, this was our way. Abaddon's offer had to be made. It was our legion's law. Whenever we faced an opponent worthy of hearing it. "It is over," I told Ulrich. He knew it as well as I did. "But I would have you as a brother, Ulrich and Sontin. From shame and shadow recast, in black and gold reborn." I felt Abaddon's eyes on me. I had expected my lord to be furious after Daravec's insulting recitations of his desecrations against us, but the opposite was true. Had his temper been a ruse? He was calm now, his aura tightly controlled, betraying only the faintest hint of amused pleasure. "What did I tell you?" he said to me silently, the words rich with pride. "You had to rediscover your hatred, just as I said." I was watching Ulrich. "My offer is sincere," I said to him. And it was, though I admit that I wanted him to refuse. I wanted to kill him for everything he and the others of Daravec's armada had done, but I knew the words were right the moment I spoke them. I would never be able to forgive him, but I would trust his spite and rage at my side in the long war. His breath was a wheezing sore. It sounded like a chainsaw choking on inferior fuel. Perhaps I had sundered two of his lungs and damaged the third after all. And Sontin took a step towards me. And there he died. His helmeted head rolled to the side, his headless body dropped to its knees, and folded upon itself with that familiar dull resonance of ceramite striking ceramite. Behind the fallen corpse, Daravec swung his axe to the side, flicking blood from its blade. Some of those flecks landed on the black banner, which can only have been intentional.
"You petty creature," I spat at Daravec.
"Kaon, it's over."
Abaddon beckoned me back to his side. I refused to heed him.
"You are next,"
I promised Tagus Daravec. The numb throb of my amputated arm was an irritating distraction. I concentrated, forcing the flesh to re-knit, beginning the process of regrowth that would take time, even with psychic gifts. Yet I leveled my sword, pointing its tip at the warlord whom I had failed to kill so many times before.
"You are next."
"They shame you, don't they?" he asked in calm reply. "All of those failures."
He could read my thoughts, effortlessly. Never had I met any other sorcerer capable of piercing my mind without monumental effort, if at all.
"Kaon,"
Abaddon called, louder this time.
"It's over."
but I would not move.
"What is it you want from this moment?"
Darevek asked me.
"What is it you imagine may happen? That with only one arm you will best me blade to blade? That you will bring your mighty sorcery to bear against me and drag my soul from my body?"
I advanced on him step by step. His warriors reached for their weapons, but I paid them no mind. As naked as I felt, without Nagual and Nefertari hunting at my side, my blood sang with adrenal promise. I could kill him. I could kill Darevek now. I knew it. He was grinning, a slit of blackened teeth in a peeled-back maw.
"Kneel," he said to me.
And I knelt. My knees slammed against the wraithbone ground with an eerie chime. It was not the pose of a warrior pledging service, but that of a slave before his master. I sensed my brother's shock, but it was nothing compared to my own. "Ezekiel!" I tried to send in warning, but my silent voice was strangled, choked as surely as if the warlord's hands were at my throat. I tried to rise, only to find myself locked with muscle cramps, my lungs seizing, scarcely able to draw breath. Darevek approached me, burning wings, shedding feathers of ash, his rotting head haloed in ethereal majesty.
"Apologize for this unseemly display," he said in a tone of infinite patience.
"I will carve your heart from... Forgive me," I said.
My mouth had moved. The words had spilled forth.
"Forgive you for what?"
A bubble of dark fluid swelled and popped at the edge of Darevek's mouth. I tried to stand. Instead, my throat vomited forth more quiet, calm words of surrender.
"Forgive me for this unseemly display."
"Well done."
He licked his teeth, making a show of tasting the oily saliva stringing between his fangs.
"I'd wondered, Kaon, if you were hiding the truth from your brethren, fearful they might kill you for it. But I see the ignorance in your eyes now, and I realize you are hiding nothing. You simply don't remember, Drolkir."
There was nothing I could do about the loathsome mockery in his tone.
"There is nothing to remember,"
I replied, trying and failing to rise from my knees. "It was a battle like any other." His grin shed a treacly spume of poisoned ooze, and he said the words that had irritated me for years, words I had heard 100 times and more.
"Iskandar Kaon died at Drolkir."
That stupid rumour. Nothing more than the kind of false word of mouth that so often travelled between warbands in the unreliable winds of our hellish haven. Whatever control he held over me, it was loose enough then for me to speak.
"You are a fool,"
I told him.
"I know you died, Kaon,"
Darevek promised.
"I was the one to tear open your throat."
The assault against my mind came without warning, too fragmented to be a memory, but too vivid to be psychic implantation. Images and moments descended upon me, all out of any discernible order, and behind it the strange touch of slow dawning comprehension. Running, knee-deep in the polluted hissing snow of Drolkir, blood spray flecking across the white slush.
Blood, my blood, that is my blood.
Bodies half buried in the snow, rimed with frost the moment they fell. Alchemical fog so thick it resembled morning mist. The screaming of warriors and mutants drowning in the toxic smog.
"Do something, sorcerer!"
The kick of my bolter, the hammering of drop pods as Ashokai's rubrikai joined mine, their arrival shaking the ground, the crash of my axe, Saen, the axe of Fenrisian forge fires, against a rusted, corroded crescent of a weapon. Darevek's axe.
"Iskandar Kaon, we meet at last."
The rushing of air, the crack of ceramite, and a feeling of weightlessness, of suffocation, of eyes sucked dry, of fingers numbed with frostbite, of your own skull weighing an impossible burden of...
"You are mine, son of Magnus."
A pressure, like telekinesis, but not physical. A pressure against the soul itself and not the body. The ground not just shaking but rattling as the sun is eclipsed by the shadow of an iron god. Titans! The god-machines walk. The screaming whine of a warhorn, warning those beneath it. The ozone reek taste of overcharged, suffering void shields. The rage-born howl of a wolf. The rending of steel beneath heavy fur and razor fangs. Gaia, my wolf, my lethal huntress, torn from me, destroyed by Horus reborn. The suction of blood, the loosening of bone, the mincing of meat. Where is Nefertari? Why is she not here? This was before she came to the eye, before she was my weapon. And then, at the edge of the sensory siege, the pathetic mercy of release. Is this now? Is this then? The weakness and freedom of a puppet's strings cut. The crash of ceramite against Wraithbone. I looked up at Daravek now, here on Teal Shara, and exhaled a breath that tasted of old blood.
You cannot kill me, he said with sordid benevolence. You are mine, Kaon. I tore your throat open 3 centuries ago and ripped your soul from the wound.
You lie!
I knifed the words at him.
You lie!
He deflected them with no effort at all.
I have no need to lie, little slave. Reflect upon what you have learned this day. Reflect upon just whom you serve.
I forced my gaze to the other legionaries at Daravek's side. Was it true? How many of them were soul-bound in the same way? Daravek gestured with his axe.
Now, go back to your master, assassin.
I gasped as I once more became the master of my own body. My muscles were in spasm, my nerves misfiring. But I rose to my feet through a red haze of pain, doing all I could to show I was not shaken by his effortless puppeteering of my body. First I sheathed my blade over my shoulder. Then I ignited the defiled war banner with a psychic kindling, burning it to ash in the span of 3 heartbeats. And then I picked up Ulrek's iron-grey helm, tipped it to drop the severed head onto the Wraithbone ground, and took the helmet with me. A trophy, to remember the moment. Yet my hearts were pounding. Shame coursed through me. Shame and defeat. My failures were cast into stark relief now, and I think until that moment Abaddon had doubted my reports of the failed assassinations. It took the evidence of his own eyes to convince him. Now we knew why I had failed. None of my brothers offered comment on my supplication as I returned to their ranks. Telemachon edged away from me, as if my enthrallment to Daravek were infectious. Iliaster applied armor cement to the stump of my arm after the most cursory examination. He was a practical creature, and losing limbs is hardly critical in terms of a legionary's injuries.
Did you know?
I asked him. Did you know he killed me at Drolkir? The words were madness in my mouth. Is it even true? I could see in Iliaster's eyes that he knew nothing. After seeing me kneel, he believed it was true, but no, he knew nothing for certain either way. Telemachon had met Abaddon's eyes first, his silver face expressionless, but I sensed his slimy mirth at my weakness so brazenly revealed. He would doubtless speak with Abaddon alone, asking whether I could now be trusted, if I could ever have been trusted. Abaddon was sealed to me. He showed nothing, betrayed nothing. I had at least expected anger, but even that seemed absent. He called out to Daravek.
Unless you have another champion that wishes to die, Daravek, it's time we spoke of this truce.
I think your pet has proved his point, as I have proved mine.
Daravek stepped forwards, mirroring Abaddon's movement.
So let us begin.
Chapter 10 Ghosts of the Warp. You know, as my gracious hosts, that my arm was restored between that day long ago and my captivity now. The changes wrought upon my flesh are visible as I stand here before you in this cell, shackled and blinded. My arm regrew, perhaps regenerated would be a fairer term, though it reformed in a far changed state than it had been before its loss. It was my first mutation, and far from my last. Ahriman's rubric banished mutation from the Thousand Suns, but only among those whom had little in the way of psychic talent, and only by destroying their physical forms. The rest of us are as prone to the warp's whims and our own sins as any other being dwelling inside the eye. If you believe my former brother Azek is entirely unchanged beneath his eye-touched armour, you are as dangerously naive as he was when he unmade our legion. Ahriman believes he is perfectly unaltered. Did you know that? Yet I have seen the void that screams where his face used to be. As we met with Daravek, I did my best to ignore the ache of loss and the maddening phantasm of pain in fingers I no longer possessed, silently reciting Prosperine focusing mantras. I can still feel my fingers, I said under my breath at one point. Iliaster began to quietly detail the physiological reasons for this.
Silence, fools,
Telemachon murmured, still focused on Abaddon and Daravek. I understood why Abaddon had chosen to only bring three of us, and I dare say it made a statement to Daravek regarding how little he intimidated us. But we were heavily outnumbered, thanks to my lord's posturing. I looked across the rank of warriors opposing us, recognizing a couple of them from old battles. I'd even served one of them, Ektral the Scaled, as a mercenary in the years before I wore the black. Whether these warriors comprised a new elite bodyguard for Daravek after Iliaster and I had butchered his former kindred, or whether they were a gathering of lesser commanders meant to impress us, I could not be certain. All I knew was that we could not kill them all. Had Moriana predicted the details of this meeting? Had she seen its outcome? As much as I wished to know, I did not dare to risk a telepathic pulse to Abaddon, lest Daravek hear our shared thoughts. It was galling enough, knowing he had the ability to read mine. The warp boiled in the night heavens above the broken dome. I heard its never-ending song louder here, as the essence of unreality whispered and sang to those who would be its champions. Abaddon and Daravek were nexuses for these half-seen, half-felt forces, though I could make out no real meaning in the voices calling to them. Not that voices is even an accurate word, given the primal forces sinking gentle claws into both warriors' souls. Such nebulous sound was merely how my too mortal consciousness conceived of the powers at play. Watching the twisting sky put me in mind of Abaddon's confession after my return from Malium, when he had informed the Ezekarian of the pressures grasping at his spirit. That, too, had been a matter for intelligences not limited by mortality. Abaddon had little in the way of answers himself, merely citing a compulsion, a physical and spiritual need, to reach back into real space and seek the source of the warp song he never stopped hearing.
"I see a sword forged in a sunset,"
he had told us in a strained tone.
"I see a star dying, and its ash used to fuel the engines of a great throne of gold. I see the first murder, where brother kills brother, where the rage of the slayer and the agony of the slain becomes a tempest behind the veil."
He had spoken like this for some time. I did not mock him for such poesies. I did not laugh at them. I dreaded them. Never had I witnessed him so close to breaking apart. Seeing Abaddon murmur of his haunted dreams in a prophecy-soaked whisper was one of the most unnerving sights I have ever seen. His golden eyes glazed over with cataracts of distracted madness, as though someone or something had reached into his brain to puppeteer his fanged mouth to speak on its behalf. The warp promised him this unimaginable prize in a ceaseless song, and yet he had no way of knowing what this treasure truly was. Whatever it was, its presence was a clarion call throughout the Empyrean's tides. It inhaled hope and exhaled promise.
"Oh, is it a demon?"
Lahior had asked, as awed and uneasy as the rest of us.
"How can you trust such an offer?"
"I don't need to trust it,"
Abaddon snapped back from his polluted reverie.
"I need only to master it."
"It will be yours," Moriana promised him. "From the moment you claim it until you wear the Emperor's crown upon your brow, it will be your companion and your weapon."
Few of us were convinced. Amuriel spoke for us.
"For this,"
he said,
"you would fight a war?"
The war is sacrosanct, Abaddon replied, and it is ours, not mine. We will return to the Imperium and bring fire to those deluded souls who fight beneath the false Emperor's banners. This is Vindicta. This is why we wear the black. Whatever else waits outside the Eye, I will kill or claim as the need arises.
We knew so little about Draknaien then. I think back to our ignorance in those nights with a sense of something akin to purity. For all the strength Abaddon's blade has granted to us down the centuries, and for all the victories reaped with its screaming edge, it remains a cancer threatening to blacken my brother's heart. I believe none of its whispers. None at all. Throughout the negotiations on Tial Shara, I layered my psychic resistances in the hope of defeating Daravek's casual rifling of my mind. All the while I watched for the ambush that seemed inevitable. Daravek had us where he wanted us. The idea he might not take this chance to kill Abaddon was laughable. Worse was the thought that he could make me turn on my lord, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. Yet, if it was within his power, why had he not already willed it to happen? There was no answer to this, at least none that I could see. His warriors' thoughts were calm and assured. They seemed certain of their dominance in the truce. They had come to make demands from what they perceived as a weaker foe, not to make an agreement with them. The negotiations themselves were torturous, as they so often are between the Eye's warbands. Our relative strengths only added to the difficulty in reaching a resolution. Both sides had no wish to leave their fleets alone for too long, lest conflict break out, according to some previously planned betrayal. We could not destroy their fleet without taking horrendous casualties, diminishing any hope of bleeding the Imperium, regardless of whether Sigismund's Black Templars waited for us or not. They could not face us without the risk of sustaining the same losses. The promise of mutually assured destruction had a way of calming even the fiercest hearts. Yet their demands rained upon us. Daravek wanted ships, warriors, and materiel in exchange for holding off from an attack. Again and again he made his smirking insistences, assured that Abaddon would capitulate to preserve the bulk of our fleet.
"I will give you nothing," Abaddon replied each time.
When he wearied of Daravek's perseverance, he looked longingly at the Talon. Its autoloaders cycled in clanking response to his fading patience.
"Shall I tell you what I believe, Tagus?"
Tagus was taller than Abaddon, a rare sight given that Abaddon was cast in Horus's image. The Lord of Hosts, swollen by his supplication to the powers, inclined his head in generous benediction, as if granting a favour to a particularly amusing servant. The three of us bristled at the insult, but Abaddon only smiled.
"Speak," Daravek intoned.
"I believe you are likewise trapped in the storm."
Abaddon was holding his anger back, binding it tight, showing it only in the flashing gold of his soul-stained eyes.
"I believe the warp aided your pursuit of us, then cut you adrift in our wake, leaving you becalmed and with no idea why. I believe that the malignant essences we call gods have brought us together here in the heart of this storm to play out a game of kings and pawns, just to decide where their favour should fall."
"You have an admirable imagination, son of Horus."
Abaddon refused to rise to the bait.
"I believe, most of all, that you are frightened of us."
He scraped the Talon's claws together. Several of Daravek's warriors brought their hands inching closer to their bolters. We held motionless in response, lest mirroring their gesture provoke them into breaking the truce.
"You fear us," Abaddon continued, "and because despite your raving speeches that we are betraying the legions, and despite your petty crusades to destroy us, we not only survive, but thrive. We grow with every conflict. The icons of the failed legions are sheared from ever more suits of armour, and the colours of shame are eclipsed in numbers no other warband can match. You fear
that we are right, and that you are wrong. You fear us more than any other reason, because you had to chase us, because we were here first, because we are the ones on the verge of breaking free, despite all your attempts in these last decades to hinder us. We have been working towards this fate, while you have done nothing but seek to stop us. We've fought for true unity, all brothers beneath the black banner, while you fought against it in the guise of preserving the old failed ways. We, Tagus, have acted. You have reacted. Abaddon's gaze had roamed across the other legionaries as he spoke, and now it returned to Daravek. And here we stand at our prison's edge. Even now you have no answers to give your men. Instead, you force this meeting with us, praying you can glean insight into our plans and scavenge victory through threats. You'll lose this war, Tagus. You'll lose because you desire the gods' favor, and you fear it falling upon anyone else. Daravek opened his jaws. Black slime ran between the sewer grate of his teeth.
You are not the only one to dream of the end of empires, he warned. You are not the only one that hears Draknaen's call.
No, Abaddon admitted. But which one of us hears it louder? Who hears it clearer? The one seeking it, or the one chasing the seeker? Abaddon turned away before Daravek could reply, speaking as he walked back to us. If you're so certain of your strength, Tagus Daravek, come test it against my Black Legion now. The vengeful spirit hungers. There should have been more. We all expected harsher words to follow and promises of recrimination. Such suspicions proved unfounded, when in the very same moment three of Daravek's warriors held fingers to their vox speeds, and Asher Kai's voice drifted through my mind.
Secondor.
Asher Kai, I sent back. Do you remember Drolkir?
Of course I do.
Did I face Daravek? Did he kill me?
Blood of the Pantheon, what foolishness is this?
Daravek implied that—
Don't be ludicrous,
interrupted Asher Kai. I must speak with Ezekiel, but his mind is walled too tight. What is amiss? Explain yourself. Across from us, Daravek was speaking with his men, and a sudden disquiet radiated from their auras.
There are ships appearing before both fleets, unknown vessels of unknown allegiance, not sailing into the storm's heart, but simply manifesting before us.
Daravek's men are uneasy, I observed. It is not one of their ploys.
I have no idea what it might be. We have been boarded.
We—
What?
In the same moment, Daravek aimed his axe at Abaddon.
What treachery is this? You have broken the truce, Ezekiel!
Abaddon rounded on his rival, eyes narrowed to platinum slits.
We have broken nothing.
We have been boarded.
Ashokai's silent sending was jagged with urgency.
A single legionary. It defies explanation. Every ship in the fleet is reporting the same phenomenon. A lone warrior manifesting upon their command decks. They are not moving nor speaking. They merely stand there watching us.
I reached out to place a hand on Abaddon's shoulder and haul him back, only to see I had no hand with which to grip. It still lay on the wraithbone ground meters away.
Brother,
I said, we must return to the vengeful spirit. Asher Kai reports that we have been boarded at—
You dare!
Daravek was calling out to us.
You dare board our ships!
Daravek's warships have been boarded as well, I sent back to Asher Kai. He suspects us of breaking the truce. I looked between the two opposed, confused groups of warriors. One by one, they turned to stare across the dusty garden with its eroded statuary, where a lone warrior walked from the Eldar ruins. He was dead. I thought that at once, as easily as if I had seen decaying flesh or smelt the rotting musk of decomposition. To my sixth sense, he was without a soul, a man disconnected from the mechanisms of life. And yet he walked closer. His armour, the light grey of an overcast sky, tinged by the faintest pale green, his eye lenses red-lit from within. He was no demon. Demons have no souls, yet they are presences in the warp. They are the warp itself, and form writhing, drifting things before my psychic gaze. Yet he was no human. Humans have shining souls, and they are beacons in the warp's tumultuous night. Whatever this warrior was, he walked the line between mortal and immortal, fused with the warp, yet not born from it, saturated by the immaterium, yet not possessed by it. He had a soul, I saw as he drew near, and it was still his own, a weak thing, a dim and shredded light. There was a beauty in that, in the same way a lesser mind, reliant on the five mundane senses, might see beauty in a colour never before seen. Here before me was a kind of entity I'd never believed possible, taking the form of a brother legionary. What legion or chapter had sired him, I could not say. His armour was of a mark unknown to me then, not even matching the newer suits of Aquila pattern battle plate I had seen aboard the Black Templar's vessel. "We have encountered one of them ourselves," I said to Ashokai. Daravek's warriors brandished their weapons at this newcomer. We did not.
"Name yourself,"
Daravek demanded. I could see his knuckles tight on the haft of his axe. The grey warrior turned his helmed head to each group in turn, showing no favour either way. The voice that emerged from his helmet grill was deep, though not unusually so for a legionary, and his words were preceded by a click of vox projection, just as any of our voices were.
"I am Soranos."
Within his words I heard the telltale flow of respiration. He was dead to my sixth sense, yet alive to all others. My fascination deepened. Had he been one of us before undergoing these changes? Was he still one of us, but with mutations of the soul that set him apart? The icon on his pauldron was not one I recognized, but it was nevertheless gravid with symbolism. Two skulls set within an eight-spiked disc, one looking to the left, the other to the right. An inscription ringed the staring skulls, cast in dark silver and written in an unfamiliar dialect of High Gothic. In abisso tollamus animabus damnatus. The exact translation evaded me, but I could make out its meaning. We bear the souls of the damned through the depths.
"I am Taker Starevic," declared our rival.
He strode forwards, confronting the newcomer.
"We are aware of what you name yourself," said the grey warrior. "You speak irrelevancies."
"How did you reach us undetected?" asked Daravek. "How have your men boarded our ships?"
Saranos kept his gaze steady.
"You speak irrelevancies."
"Then what of your warband?"
Daravek pressed.
"Where do your loyalties lie?"
"You speak irrelevancies."
I do not know if Abaddon sensed something about the newcomer that I could not, or if he simply made the intuitive connection first. But he addressed the grey warrior, cutting past Daravek's useless questions.
"Will you guide us out of this storm?"
The grey warrior's armour joints purred as he looked between the two leaders.
"Yes, Ezekiel Abaddon, we will, if you meet our price."
For a time I watched through Ashokai's eyes. I bore witness to his memories, seeing the spectral warships coalesce into being. They took shape on the oculus, at first ghostly and indistinct, becoming the same pale grey-green as Saranos's armour as they drifted nearer. Imperial ships, but built to patterns I did not recognise. They possessed enough familiar elements to suggest they had been brought into being by standard template construct plans, but not by any that were in use during my years fighting for the Imperium. Like the Black Templar's vessel, these warships were newer than those we sailed aboard. The anamnesis reached out through her amniotic fluid, her hands curling as though she was strangling the closest vessel. I felt every turret and forward cannon along the vengeful spirit's hull grinding around to lock on to the far smaller ship. That was when the grey warrior manifested before the several hundred primary bridge crew, coming into being the way Saranos had appeared before us. This warrior wore the same armour and showed the same symbol, though whereas Saranos conversed, this one remained perfectly silent. Warriors, beastmen, and Ultio's mind-slaved cyborgs and robots all converged upon the figure where he stood by Abaddon's empty throne. He still made no move. All of this I took from Ashokai's mind. I took it and relayed it back to Abaddon.
"Tell Ashokai to maintain a vigil," he commanded, "but make no hostile move."
"Ezekiel orders you to maintain a vigil, but make no hostile move."
"As he wishes,"
came the reply.
"The warrior with you. He speaks."
"He does. He speaks of prices to be paid to guide us from the storm." I felt a stab of irritation from Ashokai. To be so far away from such a fascinating occurrence, it galled him. It galled him deeply. Saranos named his chapter, though each of us heard something different in curiously structured High Gothic. Iliaster heard Infernum Doctoriae, the Underworld's Guides, and Ezekiel heard Umbra Laurua, the Ghosts of the Shadows. When Saranos spoke the name, I heard him say Cathegis Lemura, the Storm's Spirits. Later, when we heard others speak of the Grey Warriors, we would piece together a rough low-Gothic approximation of their name, the Warp Ghosts. Saranos told us of his chapter's purpose, that he and his kindred were ferrymen of a kind, guiding vessels through the warp. They would, for a price, guide one of our fleets through the storm and into the narrow channel of calm space that speared through the Great Eye and led to the Cadian system. He swore in those ceaselessly calm tones that his brothers were born of no legion, yet told us we spoke irrelevances every time we asked how that was possible. He said the same when asked the year of his birth or the patterns and classes of his small fleet's unknown vessels. Never did he display a loss of patience, nor appear to favour one warlord over the other.
"I do not trust these ghosts of the warp," Telemachon murmured,
giving the name he had heard Saranos speak. None of us did, but what choice did we have? Daravek, meanwhile, spat at the idea of negotiating with the Grey Warrior.
"What are your demands, Spectre?"
"We demand nothing," said Saranos.
"Then what is your price to free us from your storm?"
"It is not our storm. And the price for guidance out of these tides is for you to discern. You will be judged by what you sacrifice."
Daravek spat at the idea.
"And if we kill you now, if we destroy your fleet?"
"Then we would die. You speak irrelevances."
"How can we trust your word in any of this?"
"Nothing I say will alter that choice. You speak irrelevances, Tagus Daravek."
"Very well."
The Death Guard warlord rested his axe on one shoulder, speaking with a confident grin that hid little of his fury.
"Here is my offer, ghost."
"We are listening," said the Grey Warrior.
"If you require ships for your fleet, I will give them to you. 10, 20, if need be, from my war spoil. I will tear them from the Black Legion and lay them at your feet. If you desire slaves, I will grant you 1,000,000 of them from the holds of Black Legion vessels. More, if that is not enough. 2,000,000, 3,000,000. If you want access to my demon forges or armament manufactories, it can be arranged. And once I claim what is mine by right, if you wish my favour in the future, then it will be yours without question."
Blood of the Changer, the sheer magnitude of that offer. Most warbands would risk destroying one another over even one of those elements, let alone all of them. The right to use a powerful warband's forges and manufactories was the kind of opportunity many warlords never saw in the entirety of their lives. Daravek offered lifelong riches for any warband, and he did so with the arrogant generosity of a king laughing while scattering gold coins onto the street for peasants to fight over. Much of it was not his to offer. The ships and slaves he spoke of were still ours for now. But they could so easily become his if this deadlock escalated into war. Nothing he said was beyond the realm of possibility. And most valuable of all was his favour. The regard and support of a warlord with Daravek's influence was enough to inspire any warband to acts of madness. Such patrons were rare indeed. At my side, I heard Iliaster exhale the same awed sigh at the wealth and opportunity being offered so royally. But Daravek was not yet done.
"And," he added through clenched black teeth, "if it is souls you desire, then I offer you the souls of Ezekiel Abaddon and his miserable Ezekarian. Ask, and they are yours. I will harvest them with my own blade, one by one, when our fleets do battle."
Saranos inclined his head, acknowledging Daravek's words before turning to Abaddon.
"We have heard the offer made by Tagus Daravek of the Legion Host. What do you offer, Ezekiel Abaddon of the Black Legion?"
My lord did not answer Saranos at once. He requested a moment to speak with his brothers, and turned to the three of us, his gaze raking over us in turn.
"I think back to Mariana's words," he said softly, "that greatness requires sacrifice, that one cannot run from what must be done. As much as I doubt her ultimate loyalty to us, and as much as I distrust her adamant beliefs, there is a cold truth to what she said. She saw this moment, not the souls gathered here, nor the offers that would be made, but she knew the time was coming when a great offer would need to be made. And now here we are, with her words echoing through my skull. The necessity of sacrifice."
He gestured to me, indicating my arm.
"You showed it yourself, Kaon, this very night, sacrificing your arm, suffering a grievous loss to win an even greater victory. Without that loss, you would have died. How many myths and legends all grow from the same seeds? A multitude of tales preach that sacrifice is at the root of epochal progress. How many warriors throughout history have laid down their lives so that their nations would survive?"
For the first time in years, he looked at peace, as if the decision he was making was a fight back against the pressures upon his soul.
"If you wish to beseech the god of war, you kill in his name and risk your own death. If a warrior wishes to join our newborn legion, he is forced to balance individual glory and personal freedom with the cause we all share. He battles beneath my banner, as well as his own. He carves the icons of his former life from his metal plate, and he stains his ceramite black. Sacrifice is all. Sacrifice is made for greater gain."
Abaddon hesitated, no longer looking at Telemachon or Iliaster, only at me.
"A sacrifice is only meaningful if one surrenders something precious."
"You are a ritualist, Iskandar, a sorcerer, a philosopher. Is that not the truth of it?" I thought of my father Magnus and his ritual to send word to the Emperor, the many apprentices and cultists that lay dead on desecrated altars even before we were rendered excommunicate traitoris. It had worked, though with devastating consequences. I thought of Ahriman, my courageous, foolish, beloved, hated brother Ahriman, and the rubric he wove that destroyed our legion. He had sacrificed nothing of true worth. He believed in himself above all else, and he had been punished for his flawed attempt to cheat the changer of the ways. I thought of the sacrifices I had made down the many years, as part of rituals, summonings, bindings. So many of them had involved blood and death, and the most powerful always demanded the most intimate of sacrifices. One did not deal with demons without making sacrifices to them. The slaughter of a stranger holds almost no power, no emotional resonance. The butchering of a close brother, betraying his trust, is an act that sings out across the warp.
"By its nature," I finally replied,
"a sacrifice must cost the giver, otherwise it is merely an offering. True sacrifices are fueled by such depth of emotion that they echo into unreality. They are the offers that the warp hears, and the ones it most often answers."
"They are the offers that history hears, brother."
Abaddon was smiling now, though there was no humor upon his visage. He turned from us, walking towards Saranos. The grey warrior had not moved at all.
"What do you offer, Ezekiel Abaddon.
Abaddon spoke his offer. It took far less time than Daravek's many promises, and was done before I could stop him. I would have tried. I told myself that afterwards, and I have maintained it through all the years and wars since. Had I known what he would offer, I would have tried to stop him. Instead he spoke, just a single sentence, and I had no time to do anything but stare in shock. As soon as he had spoken, other warriors in the same grey-green as Saranos drifted from the shadows and from the air itself, striding forwards and taking form, 10 of them, 20, 50. They levelled their bolters at Daravek and his officers.
"Return to your vessels," Saranos ordered Daravek's men. "Your offer has been refused."
Pus ran from Daravek's eyes in creamy mimicry of Fury's tears. It took me a moment to realize there were maggots hatching within his skull and spilling from his tear ducts.
"You have made a grievous mistake,"
he warned Saranos and the grey warriors. Saranos's only reply was to draw his blade, a slow and stoic threat. Wisely they left without bloodshed. I doubted we had long before Daravek's armada attacked, and we made ready to return to the vengeful spirit. For there we would offer up our sacrifice. Chapter 11. Sacrifice. Nagual and Nefertari awaited me on the bridge. The former came to me at once, trailing at my side, baring his fangs and swearing to destroy whomever and whatever had wounded me. "He's already dead, Nagual. I killed him." He offered, in his simple way, to find my opponent's soul in the warp and devour it for me, or bring it to me in his jaws, that I might use it for my own purposes. I had no desire for either eventuality. Binding a soul is a monumental undertaking for a mortal. Few sorcerers manage it even once. Let Ansontin burn. Let his soul journey on its way to oblivion. Nefertari offered none of Nagual's open loyalty. She sat in a tiptoed crouch atop the backrest of Abaddon's command throne, her wings half-spread for balance. She leapt up when we entered and took wing, her arc carrying her over several consoles before she rested, perched on the railing of one of the upper balconies. Beastmen brayed and cawed up at her, all of whom she ignored. They despised her as an alien thing. The most attention she ever paid to them was when she hunted them as prey and flayed them as playthings. She paid them no notice now, however, because her laughter rang out across the bridge instead. She was laughing at me, more specifically at my arm. There would be a lecture in my future about my blade skills. Above all of us, Ashokai's navigational platform was notable for its new presence. A grey warrior, cast in Saranos's image, standing in dreadful serenity and making no move at all. My former mentor remained up there, watching this intruder into his private realm. He greeted me with a psychic sending. I returned it, hiding my guilt for what was about to come.
"What deal was struck?"
he sent to me. I pulsed my memories of just what had happened. Ashokai sifted through the scene in the wastelands of the craft world, his own thoughts growing colder.
"I do not know what Abaddon's offer entails," he admitted. "It could be anything at all."
I said nothing. Unease serpentined its cold and greasy way through me. Abaddon marched to the central dais.
"All to you. Report."
The anamnesis did not need to watch the oculus. Her attention was spread throughout the ship's bones and gun imagifiers. Yet she stared at the oval screen with particular intensity.
"I sense presences aboard," she said, sounding confused and distant.
"Report on the enemy fleet,"
Abaddon clarified, eyes narrowing as he gazed upon the oculus himself. He sat in the command throne with an ungainly growling of Terminator armor joints. I shared a glance with Telemachon. Outside of negotiating with other warbands, our lord only ever occupied Horus's throne when gripped by irritation or fury. This seemed to be both.
"Ezekiel,"
Ultio said, her confusion deepening, making her sound somehow younger.
They are taking my crew."
"I want you concentrating on Daravek's armada. Are they moving?" What formations are they adopting? Focus, damn you!
It was the first time I had seen her openly failing to heed his orders.
I hear the same loss across the fleet, in the voices of the Armada's captains. These presences are leeching lives from our crews.
Abaddon hammered his fist against the arm of his throne.
Altio! I know what is happening. It's happening by my will. Now focus on what matters.
Her eyelids flickered several times, evidence of immense cognitive processing taking place inside her gestalt mind. A moment later, she swirled in her fluid, coming back to herself.
Tagus Darevec's fleet is advancing, she said.
Abaddon heaved a breath.
Battle stations!
That will not be necessary, Serenos
said from his place at the side of Abaddon's throne.
We will guide you from here before they can engage you. But first, there is the matter of payment.
We never learned the exact cost. There was no way we could, for no officer in the fleet truly knew the scale of the human communities dwelling within the bowels of their warships. Slaves bred other slaves, dregs bred other dregs, regiments of thrall soldiers, the lost and the damned, you might say, merged and blended and split apart, all away from the eyes of their Black Legion masters. Some of our warbands enforced rigid discipline upon their human and mutant soldiers, while others threw them into war as a ragged tide and paid them no mind between battles. The same as any other vessel, the Vengeful Spirit was home to tens of thousands of unknown, unlisted humans eking out a living in the deeper decks. In truth, we only descended into those levels for two reasons: to stir the rabble into a frenzy before deploying them as bolt fodder, or, far more rarely, harvesting their ranks for male children who would make viable candidates for ascension into our ranks. But we lacked the functioning resources to devote any real efforts to that process. There was no true recruitment, only stasis and slow depletion. Our new allies, however, suffered no such limitation. When Abaddon made his offer to Serenos, he had laid his ambition bare. He would escape the Eye, no matter the price. How many children were taken from the benighted cities that spread throughout our warships' bellies? How many families living in those tribal clans and blighted depths cursed our allies for the theft of their young? These miserable questions have no answer. I suspect, however, that they took the children with the most promising souls first, the ones that would in time bloom with psychic strength. Not all, of course, but many. So very many. And I suspect this not because of some misguided concern over their cruelty. No, I believe it is true purely because of what Abaddon offered them when he made his great gamble and threw his ambitions bare before us. His exact words were what mattered. Serenos had watched my lord's approach.
What do you offer, Ezekiel Abaddon?
Abaddon replied with only three words.
Whatever you need.
Serenos moved among us now, a grey figure amidst the ragged hordes of bridge crew. His red eye lenses tracked left and right as his gaze lingered on the warriors present, drifting over the mutants and humans. He made his way across the command deck, all while our holds were being drained of potential recruits, the actions of the spectral space marines unopposed by anyone but the screaming parents of the stolen children. Their resistance was as useless as you can imagine. I'm sure that unarmed hands scraped uselessly against grey ceramite, and that plaintive cries fell on deaf ears. The warp ghosts took what they had come for. But that was not all they came for. Abaddon had promised a sacrifice, and offered them whatever they needed. This they took.
Ezekiel, Altio called down from her raised tank. The Abyssal Shadow reports that their void seer is...
She trailed off, looking up, lifting her gaze to the navigational balcony at the apex of the bridge's ornate architecture. Our gazes followed. Three grey figures materialized out of the dark air, their dirty armor seeming to eat the sick half-light of the illumination globes as they advanced on Ashikai. I want to tell you that I had not expected this when Abaddon made his dreadful gamble. I want to say that I fought for my former mentor, that I opposed Abaddon's sacrificial offering, and the bond between Ashikai and I holds fast to this day. That would make for a pleasing beat in the song of this long saga. That despite losing so many brothers over the centuries, my oldest companion, the scholar that first taught me the rudiments of sorcery, remains by my side to the very last. I want to tell you that I did not stand by, doing nothing but playing my part in his betrayal. But I promised that every word on these pages would be true. The truth is that I drew my sword. The truth is that I stepped forwards, my gaze raised, and called Ashikai's name across the teeming bridge. Boosters flared nearby. Telemachon and Zaidu struck the deck before me, rising from their swift landings and barring my way, blades in their hands. The masked prince was silent, his face mask impassive and beautiful. Zaidu growled a wet, snarling laugh, a warning sound from the throat of a beast. Yet it was Ashikai that stopped me. Not Telemachon and Zaidu's needless posturing, nor even Abaddon's cold scowl at my reaction. It was Ashikai, raising a hand to ward me away.
"I should have guessed," he said to me. "What else would the ferryman of the damned need?"
His silent voice was raw with icy, amused revelation.
"This is their life, their entire existence. They need more ferrymen."
I felt him send a telepathic command to his rubrikai, commanding them to lower their weapons. They did so at once.
"This is not brotherhood,"
I sent the words as a blade, knowing Abaddon would hear them.
"Wrong again, boy,"
said Ashikai, with the informal title he had not used in centuries.
"This is a sacrifice for a greater cause. It is the very essence of brotherhood."
One of the grey warriors placed a hand on Ashikai's shoulder. Another drew a curved dagger, its blade scratched with unreadable runes. He rested it under Ashikai's white chin, its tip seemingly ready to plunge upwards through the jaw and into my first tutor's brain. I could sense the warp ghosts speaking to him, but I heard nothing of their words and detected none of their meaning. Ashikai closed his albino eyes, and barely perceptibly he nodded.
"If we fight them,"
I sent to him,
"then the fleet dies."
Amuriel was at my side as well, partly, I thought, to lend support against Telemachon and Zaidu, and partly to prevent me doing anything foolish that would antagonize the shrieking masquerade's commanders. He certainly bore no love for either of them beyond fraternal loyalty. Nagual prowled to stand at my other side. I calmed him with a reluctant sending, telling him it was over. I was wrong, however. Someone had yet to voice her say on the matter. Ultio was still watching the theft of the sorcerer responsible for guiding her through the warp. In a move of near flawless unity, every enthralled cyborg and war robot of the Syntagma across the bridge raised their weapons and aimed their shoulder cannons at the grey warriors in our midst.
"You are not taking him,"
the Anamnesis stated. The Lumaglobes flickered brighter, a sign of her rising temper.
"He belongs to the vengeful spirit. He is mine."
Abaddon's eyes glittered. I could read the surprise there, subtle as it was. He had not expected this. Moriana dared to raise her voice against the ship's heart, only for one of the Castellax robots to whirl on her in a grinding chorus of gear joints. Both of its industrial claws opened like the threatening maws of iron dragons. Flame projectors mounted on both forearms hissed, their pilot lights lit, ready to bathe her in twin gouts of alchemical fire.
"You shut your mouth on my bridge,"
Ultio told the prophetess.
"Save your poison for other ears."
Ultio did not deign to look at her. The Anamnesis kept her gaze fixed upon the navigational balcony.
"Grey ones,"
she called to Saranos's warriors.
"Behold your fleet."
The entire ship shivered, coming alive, rolling in the storm's silence. We could feel the vengeful spirit's gun decks rumbling as its city-killing cannons realigned, no longer locked on Daravek's distant fleet. Instead, they trained their lethal aim on the grey ships of our new allies.
Altio, enough of this,
Abaddon ordered her. Was the ship's ancient machine spirit at war with the new soul that claimed the vessel? I do not know. I know that Altio hesitated. She was Abaddon's creature through and through now, despite her origins. When he spoke, she listened. When he commanded, she obeyed. But not this time.